life is really worth. It's a-
From the heartland deep in the Ouachita Mountains of western Arkansas, where the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed, the Guerrilla Media Network presents The Reynolds Reveal, the new weekly show that, no matter the limitations that may trammel inquiry elsewhere, sifts and winnows without fear or favor. Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I am your host, Morgan Reynolds, and today is Tuesday, February 19, 2013. This is episode number 2 of The Reynolds Reveal. I very much appreciate you for being part of the show. And yes, we do welcome your calls here at the Guerrilla Media Network. The number is 218-862-9829. That number again, 218-862-9829. I've got to tell you that I've been waiting all week for episode number 2 of The Reynolds Reveal. What fun. What a privilege and what an opportunity for yours truly. Yesterday was President's Day. Did you get off from work? No? What? You're not a federal employee? I didn't get any mail. Last week, I didn't have an opportunity to comment much about Mr. Abraham Lincoln as part of the inaugural show. Why? Because we had a VIP, a very important person as a surprise guest, Dr. Judy Wood, author of the powerhouse book, Where Did the Towers Go? You can go buy this book, educate yourself, and you can get it at wheredidthetowersgo.com online. At least that's one place. Okay, now, Mr. Lincoln will receive his due this show, as I will introduce Professor Tom DiLorenzo, the leading scholar on Lincoln and the leading buster of the Lincoln myth, in our next segment. But first, in this segment, I want to make various comments on things that have come across my desk, and they all relate to wages and income, it seems. Guess what? I'm an economist, a PhD economist. I've studied this for my whole career, and while economics is not the purpose of life, the be-all, end-all, it sure is an important means to a better life. And item 1 on my list is called All in a Day's Work. This was printed in 1887 by the W.O. Taylor Printing Office, All in a Day's Work. And I'm going to read you a segment out of this. The reason it came across my desk is my wife is a registered nurse, and she received this from a friend for her birthday. And I quote, "The nurse who performs her duties without fault for 5 years will be given an increase of 5 cents, providing there are no hospital debts." I assume the 5 cents is a daily. Continuing on, "Each nurse shall lay aside for each payday a goodly sum of her earnings for her benefits during her declining years so that she will not become a burden. For example, if you earn $30 a month, you should set aside $15. Graduate nurses in good standing with the director of nurses will be given an evening off each week for courting purposes. For 2 evenings a week, if she goes to church regularly, the nurse will report every day at 7 a.m. and leave at 8 p.m., except on the Sabbath, on which day you will be off noon to 2 p.m. Duties include daily sweep and mop the floors of the ward, dust the furniture and windowsills, maintain an even temperature in the ward by bringing in a scuttle of coal every day. Each day you should fill the kerosene lamps, clean the chimneys, and trim the lamp wicks. Wash the windows once a week." My, how things have changed. And that's one reason history is important. It not only tells us where we've come from and therefore in part who we are, but how the culture has changed, social mores, and the economy. Okay, next I'm going to go right to the present. I've got a column by Paul Krugman the notorious 2008 Nobel Prize winner in economics, who teaches at Princeton University, and of course he's a regular columnist for the New York Times. And the headline is, Raise That Wage. And Krugman says, President Barack Obama laid out a number of good ideas. What? Where? Laid out a number of good ideas in his State of the Union address. Unfortunately, almost all of them would require spending money, Krugman continues. And so it's hard to imagine with the Republican control of the House that that will happen. One major proposal, Krugman says, wouldn't involve budget outlays. The president's call for a rise in the minimum wage from $7.25 an hour to $9, with subsequent increases in line with inflation. Now, economists, of course, historically advise against this artificial overpricing of entry-level or low-skill or no-skill labor because of the law of demand. You make it more expensive, employers buy less of it. So it doesn't help, certainly, black youths in our inner cities to acquire skills by on-the-job learning. Okay, but now we've got all kinds of, you know, the economics trade has gotten subverted by all kinds of interventionists, semi-socialists. And Krugman does concede that raising it to $20 an hour would have very open disemployment effects for low-skill and no-skill entry-level labor. But if you only have it small amounts, it's harder to detect. So he doesn't even recognize this. He says, for example, quote, U.S. experience, it turns out, offers many natural experiments here in which one state raises its minimum wage while others do not. And while there are dissenters, as there always are, the great preponderance of the evidence from these natural experiments points to little, if any, negative effect of minimum wage increases on employment. Well, you want to talk natural experiments. When they first passed the federal wage and hour law in 1938, it applied to Puerto Rico, where average wages were half what they were on the mainland. And it was 25 cents an hour was the first minimum wage. Well, within 2 years, disemployment was 50% in Puerto Rico, and they were screaming to be exempt because the economy was at a much different level, lower level than the U.S. mainland. Okay, Krugman ends by saying this would be a wonderful thing. Yeah, a lot of white youths, for example, would retain their jobs at a higher minimum wage, and they would thereby benefit being retaining employment at a higher wage. But minorities in particular, youths would suffer diminished legal earning opportunities. Okay, I'm going to go to the next item on the agenda. The headline, top 1% received 121% of income gains during the recovery. The bottom 99% lose 0.4%. How, why, solution? Well, this column by Mike Shedlock cites a study by one Emmanuel Sayers of UC Berkeley called Striking It Richer, The Evolution of Top Incomes in the United States. And let me read a couple of these numbers to you. If we look at, and let's take this study at face value and not dig too hard. At face value, we're looking at income gains in real terms, so they're adjusting for inflation. From 1993, when Clinton assumed office, up till 2011, well, the average income gain over this nearly two decades was 13%. But the top 1% of incomes grew by over 57%. The bottom 99% of incomes in this two decades grew 5.8%. So if you look at the lion's share of the gains went to the top 1%, 62%. So given this valuation of lower inequality or greater equality, a lot of intellectuals and maybe some of us even look at this and say, well, something's way wrong here, isn't it? Well, Mike Shedlock points out in an inflationary economy like this, quote, it's crucial to understand that inflation benefits accrue to those with first access to cheap money, the banks and the already wealthy, unquote. So the financial and power elite, they have first, I mean, look at the Fed's basically printing $85 billion new dollars a month, and that goes to those at the front of the line. And it then, of course, trickles down. And we could tell a long story about the housing bust, about how that played out. And then Mike Shedlock, and I agree, says the solution to income disparity is not wage caps or on executive pay or hikes in the minimum wage, but rather the elimination of the Fed, the elimination of fractional reserve lending, and a return to sound money policies that do not benefit the already wealthy at the expense of everyone else. Okay, well, a couple more comments then. Truly, we do have a problem in terms of slow or no real income growth on average since the 1970s. And let me give you a lesson from Murray Rothbard in his great book, A History of Money and Banking in the United States, where on page 162, he points out there are three necessary conditions for real wage increases. Foremost, the absence of sustained inflation. Second, a rise in savings and capital formation. And three, technological advance. Well, number one, that condition is not fulfilled in the least with our central bank, right? If you look back in 1913 when the Federal Reserve was created, you know what a first-class stamp cost? 2 cents. What is it now? 44 cents? So that's just one of many goods that's gone up on the order of 20-fold. So how's the Fed? The Fed says they're fighting inflation all the time. No, they're not fighting it. They're creating it. And that's one of the worst things we can have in terms of real income growth. The money, last week in my first show, the first caller to talk to me actually brought up money and banking and the value of the paper U.S. dollar. And boy, if that isn't central to so much of our economic woes. And I'm going to quote Murray Rothbard furthermore on how important this is. He asks, where would you rather do business, in a country with fiat paper money or a hard money country whose currency is 100% redeemable in silver and gold? Where would you rather do business? Okay, and that ties right into the second point, a rise in savings and capital formation. If you've got a hard money, interest will actually be earned and won't be eroded by inflation or have, in effect, a negative interest yield on savings. So it encourages savings. And foreign investment if you've got a sound hard currency. And therefore, it encourages, it finds its way into productive investment or capital formation. And that creates wealth. The 1880s are a great example of real wage increase despite enormous unprecedented immigration into the U.S. from Europe. And then finally, technological advance, of course, that depends on science, then engineers, and then entrepreneurs. You know, Steve Jobs, there's a great example of technological advance and the digital revolution. But in truth, our technological advance has been pretty modest in recent decades. And I would attribute that to mistaken forms of interventionism. So if you look back, you can see how wrong-headed Paul Krugman is. I mean, it's just a twice a week dollop of nonsense. And I can remember going into my first undergraduate class in economics. That would be 1961. And Mr. Marx was the instructor. And back in that day, the economics profession was still dominated by what I call the stinkers at the garden party. Economists were used to be the guys who say, oh, you want to do that intervention? Do you know what the impact of that would be, both intended and unintended? You don't know what you're talking about. You know, in other words, you'd show how counterproductive the intervention would be in the marketplace. And now, however, it's such a mixed bag, and political correctness and leftism has taken over profession where we used to be the grouchy conservatives. You know who used to be the economic columnist at the New York Times? Henry Hazlitt. He was a great economist, self-educated intellectual, as opposed to this much credentialed Paul Krugman, who it's really embarrassing. It's embarrassing where economists aren't at all what they used to be, and the consequences have really been terrible. If you look at macroeconomic policy, fiscal and monetary and banking policy, it's been dominated by the works of John Maynard Keynes and Milton Friedman, and both of them to the dissatisfaction of yours truly and incredible destruction of wealth. Okay, we're going to go in our next segment. I'm going to invite on my guest, Tom DiLorenzo. So I'll see you on the other side of the break.
Well, we're living here in Allentown, and they're closing all the factories down. Out in Bethlehem, they're killing time, filling our forms, standing in line. Well, our fathers fought the Second World War, spent their weekends on the Jersey Shore, met our mothers in the USO.
Ever ask yourself, where do the towers go? Well, if you want the truth, if you can handle the truth, tune in Thursdays and Fridays from 5 till 7 Pacific Coast Time. Dr. Judy Wood is doing a program called ICU PSYOP Recovery Program, addressing your questions, your curiosities, your mysteries regarding that fateful day. So, it's a character-driven production on Guerrilla Media Network, 5 to 7, Thursdays and Friday evenings, Pacific Coast Time. If you can handle the truth, tune in.
Did you know there's a way to legally wipe out your credit card debt, stop harassing telephone calls, even stop foreclosure and repossession? I'm talking about Chapter 7 of the Federal Bankruptcy Code. Federal bankruptcy laws were designed to get the creditors off your back and give you a fresh start. Imagine waking up one morning without stressing about debt. It's true, and it could be you. Call right now at 800-281-2286 to see if you qualify for this powerful debt relief program. We're the law offices of Craig Zimmerman. Craig has been a practicing attorney for 17 years and has an A+ Better Business rating. We know how to make the law work for you to give you a fresh start. We provide a free initial confidential consultation. Don't spend another day wondering what to do about your debt. Call 800-281-2286. The consultation is free and so is your phone call. You have nothing to lose but your debt, so call now at 800-281-2286. That's 800-281-2286. Office is located in Dallas and Santa Ana, California.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to tell you about a revolutionary new product from our sponsor, Elixir Liquid. It's called an electronic cigarette. If you're a smoker and you're sick and tired of killing yourself and those around you, you really need to check out this product, Elixir Liquid and Electronic Cigarette. Traditional cigarettes have over 4,000 chemicals along with 65 known carcinogens and are being sold for up to $11 a pack in some places around the country. Electronic cigarettes, on the other hand, consist of only three ingredients and are a fraction of the price of traditional cigarettes. An electronic cigarette, or e-cigarette, consists of a rechargeable battery, a small heating element called an atomizer, and liquid nicotine. When used, the e-cigarette will produce what looks like smoke, but it's actually a harmless water vapor while giving you the nicotine your body is craving. That's right, you can finally get all the nicotine you need without all the harmful chemicals associated with smoking. If you've ever tried to quit smoking, or if you tried one of those overpriced, low-quality electronic cigarettes being sold in the mall and were less than impressed, you need to visit our sponsor, Elixir Liquid, at www.futuresmokes.com today. That's www.futuresmokes.com. Once you're there, you'll find the hottest electronic cigarettes and accessories and over 100 choices of intensely flavored liquid nicotine. That's right, Elixir Liquid is known for their mind-blowing, handcrafted liquid nicotine. So if you're already an e-smoker, be sure to check these guys out. No tar, no carcinogens, and no foul odors. The electronic cigarette truly is the future of smoking. So stop killing yourself and those around you and try an electronic cigarette from Elixir Liquid today. And fans of the Pete Santilli Show can get a special 10% discount with coupon code REVOLT at checkout. That's www.futuresmokes.com.
Mamma Mia's Authentic Italian Cookie Company. Hand-rolled traditional-style Italian cookies from recipes passed down through the generations from Sicily to Louisiana. A taste of the old world can now be savored and made a tradition in every home worldwide. Imagine the delight of your family and guest when they bite into the authentic taste of Italy at your next family holiday or special occasion. Mamma Mia's Authentic Cookie Company, preserving the art of Italian baking and providing you with quality, delightful cookies that you will enjoy for years to come. 14 different Italian cookies sold by the pound and FedEx to your door. Could anything be more convenient? Visit MamaMia's.com and browse in Mama's Cookie Gallery for ideas for your next party and custom cookie order. Beautiful cookies baked in America, inspired by Italy and Mama's love. Mamma Mia's Authentic Italian Cookies. Traditional, convenient, and delicioso. Biscotto molto buono.
Welcome back to the Reynolds Reveal, where the truth rides tall and falsehoods are in the ditch. I've got on the line an important guest, a guy whose work I love. It's Professor Thomas DiLorenzo from Loyola College in Baltimore, Maryland. And Thomas, I don't know, you've got maybe 13 books or so. You can correct me if I'm wrong, but a couple of them are so apropos here on the day after President's Day and 1 week late on Lincoln's birthday. A couple of the books are The Real Lincoln and Lincoln Unmasked, What You're Not Supposed to Know About Dishonest Abe. So we can gather a lot from his titles. It's not just your ordinary Lincoln hagiography or idolatry. Thomas, I remember we met at I guess it was the 10th anniversary of the Cato Institute long ago.
Yeah, probably 20-some years ago.
Yeah, I'm thinking maybe early in the Reagan administration, somewhere in the 80s that would have been. Yeah. And you've done such great work. And one of the issues that comes up is Henry Ford famously said, history is bunk. And at one level, I kind of agree with him in that so much of conventional history is bunk. But why should we care about Abraham Lincoln today?
Well, you know, a lot of other people obviously care about it. You know, there's the Spielberg movie that's out now, and there's another one based on Bill O'Reilly's book, Killing Lincoln, about the assassination of Lincoln. And I heard there's another one yet in the works. And this has, you know, been going on for 150 years, what I call the Lincoln idolatry, because what happened after Lincoln's death is he was deified. He was turned into a secular saint. Although there's a very good historian named Larry Tagg who wrote a book called The Unpopular Mr. Lincoln 2 years ago, and the subtitle is America's Most Reviled President. And based on all these original sources, he concluded that Lincoln was by far the most hated and reviled of all American presidents during his own lifetime, and this included by the people of the northern states and European, just about everybody. That the New York Times even editorialized, hoping that he would be stabbed to death. I quoted it in one article. It was just, you know, today they would be end up in Guantanamo, whoever would write such a thing. But then after his death, he was turned into a secular saint by the Republican Party, and it wasn't just the deification of Lincoln; it was the deification of the president. That happened, and then of government in general. So Lincoln is the face of the state, and whenever either political party wants to expand government, they always rely on the old Lincoln fables and say, "Well, Lincoln would approve, so therefore we should do this."
Yeah, Lincoln is on the penny. He's on the $5 bill. He is on Mount Rushmore. He's got arguably the most impressive monument in Washington, D.C.
Mm-hmm. You know, when the Continental Congress asked George Washington if he wanted his picture on the currency, and he said, no, that's how tyrants have always solidified their power by such means. I will never do it. And the very first politician's head that appeared on any kind of money in America was the Lincoln penny. And so, and of course, the Republican Party of Lincoln had no qualms about that sort of thing. And, you know, the Lincoln Memorial, you know, there's one creepy aspect to it in Lincoln. It has the Roman fasces on the front of it, you know, sort of a bundle of sticks.
Yes.
And you know, Julius Caesar and the Romans used as a symbol of their power. And that's on the very front of the Lincoln Memorial. And my old friend Clyde Wilson, the historian, says of the Lincoln Memorial that the symbol of America has been transformed from George Washington on his white horse to a corporate lobbyist in an armchair. And that's essentially what the Lincoln Memorial is.
And, you know, Lincoln, as you pointed out, was a big worshiper of Henry Clay and the American system. What was the American system about? In other words, what was Lincoln's ideology, we'll say, pre-war?
Yeah, well, Lincoln was a Hamiltonian in terms of politics, especially the economic aspect of his politics. And there was a political battle for about 75 years in America between the Hamiltonians, who wanted essentially to bring the rotten, corrupt British mercantilist system to America. That's basically a system of policies that would benefit politically connected producers at the expense of everybody else. And it was the Jeffersonians who were in favor of free trade and limited government, decentralized government, free markets, who opposed them. And Lincoln was a Whig for 25 years before he became a Republican. And the Whig Party was the party of the Hamiltonians. And Hamilton himself called his main policy proposals the American system. It was high protectionist tariffs to protect mostly northern manufacturers from competition, what we today call corporate welfare. In those days, they called it internal improvement subsidies. And then also a bank modeled after the Bank of England that would inflate the economy and provide cheap credit to politically connected businesses. And we eventually did get all these things. Lincoln was part of the Whig Party who fought for them for many years. He was an advocate of a central bank his entire career. And when he finally got into power, this debate ended at gunpoint. We had 45 to 50% average tariff rates for 60 years after the Lincoln administration. We had corporate welfare run amok with railroad corporation subsidies, which led to the massive corruption of the Grant administration. And we had the National Currency Act and the Legal Tender Act, which went a long way toward nationalizing the money supply during the Lincoln administration.
What do you think of the I found it fascinating, this book. Speaking of Republicans, there's a book, as you well know, called Red Republicans and Lincoln's Marxists by Kennedy and Benson. And what they do is point out that some of the failed revolutionaries in the efforts of 1848 left Europe or were banished and found their way to the U.S. and were big Lincoln supporters, basically because they saw Lincoln as the vehicle, the political vehicle towards centralization of power, and therefore the levers to impose socialism in America. It's amazing how some of these Union officers were Germans especially, but Marxists of the day.
Right. Yeah. And what, if you look at what happened, at the imposition of Marxism around the world in later decades, it's not unusual that it occurred during a war with mass killing of hundreds of thousands of people and the burning down of entire cities. That's what happened in the South during the war. I call it the war to prevent Southern independence. And so, Marxists and other totalitarians have always tried to foment revolution and war and mass murder and chaos in order to step in there. Now, they didn't get their way. They didn't step in. We got sort of a corporate plutocracy that came of the Lincoln regime. But, generals like a man named Siegel, you had all these people who barely spoke English who came from Europe and because they were in tune with Lincoln's politics. They were in favor of a highly centralized government. They, even the man who wrote the military code for the U.S. Army, Francis Lieber, he was a German immigrant who came to this country, and he taught what became the University of South Carolina after the war. And he hated Jefferson and the Jeffersonians in his writings. He sneered the idea of decentralized government that is embodied in the United States Constitution. And this is the man that Lincoln hired to write the military code for the Army. And he was a clever lawyer, was Lincoln, because the military code had all sorts of loopholes in it that would allow the Army to wage war on American civilians without penalty. They even passed a laws during the war that would exempt military officers and politicians from prosecution for murdering civilians and stealing their property, which they did all throughout the South, and not just through Sherman's march to sea, but all for the entire 4 years of the war. And so we had the spectacle of European immigrants who did not speak English coming marching down south to teach the descendants of Jefferson and Madison and George Washington what it means to be an American.
What is wrong with this picture, huh?
Yeah. One of Jefferson's descendants. It was a son. I think it was the son of one of his brother's grandson. I think it was one of the cadets from VMI, Virginia Military Institute, that was killed at the Battle of New Market, and the commanding general of the U.S. Army, and that was a German in the Battle of New Market. So they literally went down there to teach the descendants of Jefferson what it meant to be an American, or so they thought.
Tom, I want to have you address Lincoln's first inaugural and then the second inaugural. In the first one, seven Deep South states were in secession when he delivered his inaugural in March of 1861. And then he basically, correct me if I'm wrong, he basically said, well, I have no interest in upsetting the peculiar institution, slavery, and I don't want to make war. However, we are going to collect the duties at Fort Sumter and elsewhere. In other words, the duties, we're going to basically collect them from South Carolina. We, you know, well, this is like saying, hey, we're going to rule here on exports and imports. And something like 80% of federal revenues came from the import taxes.
Yeah, more like 90 to 95% at that time.
Okay. And so it was Lincoln was real firm on the at least this part of the economic issue that really underlay the war for Southern independence or war against Southern independence. And then he has been, and of course, at the second inaugural, he makes a related statement. This shows you what a deceiver he was. He says, both parties deprecated war, but one of them would make war rather than let the nation survive, and the other would accept war rather than let it perish, and the war came. Now, isn't that sweet? A passive voice, and the war came.
It just came like, as though he was sitting in his office one day and looked out the window and said, holy cow, there's a war, and he had nothing to do with it.
And isn't it true? I know that John V. Denson in this volume, which has so – this could be a majority of U.S. history, a volume called Reassessing the Presidency. You had an article about Lincoln's mercantilist policies and political – he was a full-time, double-time politician.
Right.
Rather than a country bumpkin, you know, Wikipedia calls him a country lawyer. This guy has a lot of nerve. And why is it that so many historians don't tell paint the truth about this status?
Yeah. Well, the history profession is overrun by Marxists nowadays. And some of the old timers are mere Ted Kennedy liberals, but the people who control it, who are like the presidents of the American Historical Association, are Marxists like Eric Foner of Columbia University and James McPherson of Princeton. And so they built entire careers on this edifice of a myths and superstitions about Abe Lincoln, the figurehead of the American state, because they approve of what he did. Even the current movie by Spielberg praises to the treetops in some places the fact that Lincoln illegally suspended habeas corpus and essentially ignored the Constitution, trashed the Constitution to achieve something, a greater good, so-called. And the purpose of that, I'm sure, is to encourage Obama to do the same, to just ignore, and the Congress, to ignore the Constitution, to expand our welfare state even bigger than it is now. I think that's the whole purpose of that Spielberg movie on Lincoln. But Lincoln's first inaugural address, I call it the greatest defense of Southern slavery ever made by an American politician, because it came from the President of the United States, and in the first several paragraphs, he says, I have no intention of disturbing slavery. Even if I did, it would be unconstitutional to do so. And he said, you can read all my past speeches. I haven't changed my mind on anything. And then at the end of the speech, he actually came out in favor of a constitutional amendment that would have explicitly enshrined slavery in the Constitution with explicit words. And so that was an ironclad defense of slavery. But then, as you said, Morgan, he also said in that same speech, he said, it's my duty to collect the duties and imposts, which was in tariff.
We're going to hear more about the real Lincoln on the other side of the break with Thomas DiLorenzo. This is the Reynolds Repeal.
Mamma Mia's Authentic Italian Cookie Company. Hand-rolled traditional-style Italian cookies from recipes passed down through the generations from Sicily to Louisiana. A taste of the old world can now be savored and made a tradition in every home worldwide. Imagine the delight of your family and guests when they bite into the authentic taste of Italy at your next family holiday or special occasion. Mamma Mia's Authentic Cookie Company, preserving the art of Italian baking and providing you with quality, delightful cookies that you will enjoy for years to come. 14 different Italian cookies sold by the pound and FedEx to your door. Could anything be more convenient? Visit MamaMia's.com and browse in Mama's Cookie Gallery for ideas for your next party and custom cookie order. Beautiful cookies baked in America, inspired by Italy and Mama's love. Mamma Mia's Authentic Italian Cookies. Traditional, convenient, and delicioso. Biscotto molto buono.
Hi folks, Pete Santilli here. As a prominent social media personality on Facebook and Twitter since they were first launched, I participated in one-dimensional discussions with literally hundreds of thousands of followers. When I first set up my SecondLife.com account about a year ago, I entered a whole new magical world that brought my social media activity to life. Second Life is much more than just a 3D game or a social media platform. It'll bring your online persona to life in one of the most beautiful virtual reality simulators on the internet. It's free, and besides, it's the best way to listen to the Pete Santilli Show. You can interact with me live as I broadcast daily from the Overthrow Bunker Studio. To get your free account, go to any one of our episodes and click on the Second Life banner. Once you're in, we'll give you the grand tour of our newly built Camp FEMA, the very first educational tool of its kind anywhere in the world. For a limited time, if you sign up for a new SecondLife.com account, we'll give you a priceless welcome package. SecondLife.com. Join now, tune in, and connect with your friends at the Pete Santilli Show. Ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to tell you about a revolutionary new product from our sponsor, Elixir Liquid. It's called an electronic cigarette. If you're a smoker and you're sick and tired of killing yourself and those around you, you really need to check out this product, Elixir Liquid, an electronic cigarette. Traditional cigarettes have over 4,000 chemicals along with 65 known carcinogens and are being sold for up to $11 a pack in some places around the country. Electronic cigarettes, on the other hand, consist of only three ingredients and are a fraction of the price of traditional cigarettes. An electronic cigarette, or e-cigarette, consists of a rechargeable battery, a small heating element called an atomizer, and liquid nicotine. When used, the e-cigarette will produce what looks like smoke, but it's actually a harmless water vapor while giving you the nicotine your body is craving. That's right, you can finally get all the nicotine you need without all the harmful chemicals associated with smoking. If you've ever tried to quit smoking, or if you tried one of those overpriced, low-quality electronic cigarettes being sold in the mall and were less than impressed, you need to visit our sponsor, Elixir Liquid, at www.futuresmokes.com today. That's www.futuresmokes.com. Once you're there, you'll find the hottest electronic cigarettes and accessories and over 100 choices of intensely flavored liquid nicotine. That's right, Elixir Liquid is known for their mind-blowing, handcrafted liquid nicotine. So if you're already an e-smoker, be sure to check these guys out. No tar, no carcinogens, and no foul odors. The electronic cigarette truly is the future of smoking. So stop killing yourself and those around you and try an electronic cigarette from Elixir Liquid today. And fans of the Pete Santilli Show can get a special 10% discount with coupon code REVOLT at checkout. That's www.futuresmokes.com.
Ever ask yourself, where do the towers go? Well, if you want the truth, if you can handle the truth, tune in Thursdays and Fridays from 5 till 7 Pacific Coast Time. Dr. Judy Wood is doing a program called ICU PSYOP Recovery Program, addressing your questions, your curiosities, your mysteries regarding that fateful day. So, it's a character-driven production on Guerrilla Media Network, 5 to 7, Thursdays and Friday evenings, Pacific Coast Time. If you can handle the truth, tune in. Accidents.
You are back with the Reynolds Reveal. I'm your host, Morgan Reynolds. Here we are, episode 2, February 19, 2013. And we are, is it celebrating or trashing or truthing is probably most accurate, Mr. Abraham Lincoln. And I consider Tom DiLorenzo, a professor at Loyola College in Maryland, to be the world's foremost authority on the truth about Lincoln. And Thomas, before we took the break, you were commenting about historians, and it's very disturbing. Where in the academy, it's supposed to be about the truth. At least that was my take on it when I went into the industry. And it seems to me that we've got a lot of historians who fancy themselves philosopher kings. The Arthur Schlesinger example was a very bad one. Where we've got access to the throne and encouraging President Barack Obama and the like. And I was lamenting the fact that economists in the macroeconomic field, really invented by John Maynard Keynes, and then Milton Friedman leading the monetarists, have had a malign, most malign influence on the world, especially the business cycle. The business cycles has spawned a lot of unfortunate things. One of them was that money and banking problem at the root of it led to a bust in 1846 that led to the 1848 attempts to overthrow the European some of the European regimes, you know, and the riots in the streets. So the disaffection with capitalism stems to some extent from the business cycle. And then you were commenting, I mean, today we have a lawless state, don't we? I mean, Obama or George W. Bush, they can all be war criminals, and all their compatriots can just dance freely and, I guess, make their mark in history. All wonderful.
Yeah. Well, you know, Friedrich Hayek said in his famous book, The Road to Serfdom, that unlimited government can produce the most unspeakable tyranny imaginable, even under democracy. You know, so what, they let us vote every couple of years to validate what they're doing. And that's pretty much where we are now, is unlimited government. And the role of the history profession, apparently, is to solidify that. They're all court historians, with maybe a few exceptions. And, you know, there's a libertarian historian that you probably know of. His name's David Beto. And about 20 years ago, I remember, he was just getting out of school. He got his PhD at the University of Wisconsin, which is – isn't that where you went to school?
Yeah, much to his credit and mine.
Yeah, when he was looking for his first job, I remember him saying that to get a job those days in the history profession as an academic, you not only had to write a politically correct dissertation about how America is inherently racist, sexist, homophobic, and blah, 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 but you had to be one of those. You had to be a minority or a female, or, you know, one of the oppressed classes to get a job anywhere. And it's only gotten just a lot worse since then. And so, you know, for your listeners who are not, you know, a part of academe and they don't understand how it works, it's become even more rotten since the days where you and I started out in it.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and the fish rots from the head down. It's like Chaucer in Canterbury Tales says, when the gold rusts, what will the iron do? In other words, it's very important long run what the talking, the chattering classes and the opinion molders in our society are inspired by or preach. Yeah. Let's go back to Lincoln, because one of the things that the good economists like you basically argue, or Jeffrey Hummel, whose book is Emancipating Slaves, Enslaving Free Men. I've used that in classes. It's really an excellent book. But isn't it true that if we can point to a historical fact that slavery ended mostly peaceably, when one province would go non-slavery, fugitive slaves would run away. So if the southern states were simply allowed to secede, as everybody basically conceded was their right, then slavery would have fell of its own weight, wouldn't it have?
Well, it certainly would have speeded it up, the demise of slavery, because, you know, a slave from Virginia, if he then escaped into, say, Pennsylvania, he would be a free man. But under the Lincoln regime, there was they still had the Fugitive Slave Act, so that an escaped slave, you know, before secession would have had a federal bounty on his head. That's why the Underground Railroad ended up in Canada. But there's a great book on how all the rest of the world ended slavery peacefully. It's called Greatest Emancipations by Jim Powell, and the subtitle is How the West Ended Slavery. And it's not just other countries; it's New York, New Hampshire, Massachusetts, all the northern states had slaves at the beginning of the American Republic, and they all found a way to end slavery. There were slaves in New York City until 1853, and there were slaves who built the slave ships in New York, Boston, and Providence, but they found a way to get rid of it peacefully. But Lincoln wanted to use the slaves as political pawns in a war that was about centralizing power in Washington, D.C.
Now, isn't it, speaking of the war, returning to that again, Denson, John V. Denson, and other historians have pointed out that Lincoln refused to meet with the delegates from the southern states in secession to try to avoid a war.
Right.
So tell us about that episode.
The Southerners sent peace commissioners to Washington, D.C. To try to work out some sort of a compromise. But, you know, and Lincoln was totally willing to compromise on the issue of slavery. In fact, the Republican Party platform of 1860 actually supported Southern slavery. It said that they had no intention of disturbing the domestic institutions of the states. The dispute was over the extension of slavery into the territory. And the Republicans were against that because, in their words, they said, one, they wanted the territories to be the land of free white labor. Those are Abe Lincoln's own words. That is, they wanted to win votes from adult white males who were the only people who could vote by promising them that they will not have competition for their jobs by either slaves or free blacks. And most of the territories did what the northern states did and had laws essentially making it illegal for black people to move there. Illinois was one of those states. And so that's what was going on at the time as far as that's concerned.
But Lincoln refused to see them, which suggests or implies that he sought out war.
He refused to see the peace commissioners because he didn't want to compromise over taxes. He was willing to compromise totally 100% on any issue regarding slavery. And even the famous Emancipation Proclamation, Lincoln made sure he called it a war measure. And of course, it did not free anybody because it only applied to rebel territory. But even then, if the war had ended the next day, it would have become defunct, according to Abe Lincoln, because it was a war measure. It was not. It was only meant to encourage slave rebellions in the South. It was not meant to free anybody. But on the taxes, he literally promised war over tax collection. He said in his first inaugural address, "It is my duty to collect the duties and imposts." And you put that in perspective, 4 days earlier, the federal tariff tax had been more than doubled, and tariffs accounted for at least 90% of all federal tax revenue in 1860. And so the federal tax level had been doubled a few days earlier. And here's the president saying, "There will be war. We will invade your state if you refuse to collect this newly doubled federal tax." And the South Carolinians around 1832 nullified a big federal tax increase and refused to collect it. Lincoln was saying, "I'm no Andrew Jackson. I won't back down. There will be war." And he actually used the words invasion and bloodshed to describe what would happen if Southerners refused to continue sending tax dollars to Washington, D.C. And so The idea that Lincoln invaded the South to free the slaves is the biggest bunch of nuttiness ever perpetrated by the history profession. In fact, I don't think you'd find any real historians today who would actually say that the purpose of the initial invasion had anything to do with freeing the slaves, because the evidence is so overwhelming that it didn't.
This whole business about getting the other side to fire the first shot, you know, to manipulate this thing, just like FDR did Pearl Harbor. Even that isn't important anymore in U.S. Yeah. foreign policy, is it? But back in the day, it was. But here, Lincoln undercover, and there was another fort there in Pensacola, Florida, where they were playing these games as well. Right. By sending in supplies and reinforcements, is that an act of war or not? You know, it's there's a little bit of a gray area there, and we'll discuss that when we come back. This is the Reynolds Reveal, and we're enjoying an enlightening conversation with Professor Tom DiLorenzo, an expert on Abraham Lincoln.
Did you know there's a way to legally wipe out your credit card debt? Stop harassing telephone calls? Even stop foreclosure and repossession? I'm talking about Chapter 7 of the Federal Bankruptcy Code. Federal bankruptcy laws were designed to get the creditors off your back and give you a fresh start. Imagine waking up one morning without stressing about debt. It's true, and it could be you. Call right now at 800-281-2286 to see if you qualify for this powerful debt relief program. We're the law offices of Craig Zimmerman. Craig has been a practicing attorney for 17 years and has an A+ Better Business rating. We know how to make the law work for you to give you a fresh start. We provide a free initial confidential consultation. Don't spend another day wondering what to do about your debt. Call 800-281-2286. The consultation is free, and so is your phone call. You have nothing to lose but your debt, so call now at 800-281-2286. That's 800-281-2286. Office is located in Dallas and Santa Ana, California.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to tell you about a revolutionary new product from our sponsor, Elixir Liquid. It's called an electronic cigarette. If you're a smoker and you're sick and tired of killing yourself and those around you, you really need to check out this product, Elixir Liquid and Electronic Cigarette. Traditional cigarettes have over 4,000 chemicals along with 65 known carcinogens and are being sold for up to $11 a pack in some places around the country. Electronic cigarettes, on the other hand, consist of only 3 ingredients and are a fraction of the price of traditional cigarettes. An electronic cigarette, or e-cigarette, consists of a rechargeable battery, a small heating element called an atomizer, and liquid nicotine. When used, the e-cigarette will produce what looks like smoke, but it's actually a harmless water vapor, while giving you the nicotine your body is craving. That's right, you can finally get all the nicotine you need without all the harmful chemicals associated with smoking. If you've ever tried to quit smoking, or if you tried one of those overpriced, low-quality electronic cigarettes being sold in the mall and were less than impressed, you need to visit our sponsor, Elixir Liquid, at www.futuresmokes.com today. That's www.futuresmokes.com. Once you're there, you'll find the hottest electronic cigarettes and accessories and over 100 choices of intensely flavored liquid nicotine. That's right, Elixir Liquid is known for their mind-blowing, handcrafted liquid nicotine. So if you're already an e-smoker, be sure to check these guys out. No tar, no carcinogens, and no foul odors. The electronic cigarette truly is the future of smoking. So stop killing yourself and those around you and try an electronic cigarette from Elixir Liquid today. And fans of the Pete Santilli Show can get a special 10% discount with coupon code REVOLT at checkout. That's www.futuresmokes.com.
one great thing about having Barnes & Noble as a sponsor of the Pete Santilli Show is that we love Barnes & Noble. If you visit the PeteSantilliShow.com, you'll see several ads displaying the new Nook color for the very special price of $169. If you've noticed the latest craze in ebooks, everyone's carrying their favorite brand and immersed in the internet's newest revolutionary technology, the tablet e-reader. The Pete Santilli Show is proud to offer our listeners the new Nook, and we're also excited to offer what some are calling the best in the tablet world. What's more is that the new Nook Simple Touch, Simple Touch Glow Light, Nook Color, and Nook Tablet range in the price of $199 to as little as $99. The Nook Tablet Reader from BarnesandNoble.com. Portable and definitely affordable. Visit the PeteSantilliShow.com today and click on any of the Barnes & Noble ads to find the Nook that's right for you.
Ever ask yourself, where do the towers go? Well, if you want the truth, if you can handle the truth, tune in Thursdays and Fridays from 5 till 7 Pacific Coast Time. Dr. Judy Wood is doing a program called ICU PSYOP Recovery Program, addressing your questions, your curiosities, your mysteries regarding that fateful day. So it's a character-driven production on Guerrilla Media Network, 5 to 7, Thursdays and Friday evenings, Pacific Coast Time. If you can handle the truth, tune in.
Welcome back to the Reynolds Reveal. If you'd like to call, it's 218-862-9829. That number again, if you would like to call and talk to Dr. Reynolds or Dr. DiLorenzo, 218-862-9829. Dr. DiLorenzo is the world-class scholar on the truth about Abraham Lincoln. And just to put this in perspective, Tom is among a very minority, a small minority, because every time they do one of these polls of historians or political scientists, Abraham Lincoln is number one, the greatest president. And then we've got George Washington and Franklin Delano Roosevelt among the top three. So it's an upside down world, isn't it, Tom? In terms of this adoration, the sustained adoration of Abraham Lincoln.
The polls that the historians do is, you know, whatever presidents spend the most money, accumulate the most debt, and kill the most people in wars, that's who gets the high ranking. But there's an alternative ranking in a book called Recarving Rushmore by Ivan Eland, published by the Independent Institute in California. And Ivan Eland's criterion for ranking presidents is how good a job they did protecting the lives, liberties, and properties of the American people, which is what they're supposed to be doing. And Abraham Lincoln comes out very low, near the bottom, because, you know, the death toll in the American Civil War, there's updated research that says it may have been as high as 850,000. The number for 100 years was 620,000. But the latest research has come to be accepted by all the big shots in the history profession. And that's at a time when the population of the country was about one-tenth of what it is today. So that would be the equivalent of 8.5 million people dying. And so Abe Lincoln ranks very, very low, near the bottom, in Ivan Eland's book, Recarving Rushmore. And his number one president was John Tyler of Virginia. as far as doing this job, protecting life, liberty, and property. And of course, the mainstream historians probably never heard of John Tyler. He was president in 1841 to 1845, and he enraged Henry Clay and the Whigs so much because he opposed their so-called American system. He opposed protectionism. He opposed corporate welfare. He opposed the central bank. They kicked him out of the Whig Party and burned him in effigy in front of the White House. And so so you know he had to be a good guy.
There was Ron Paul, the great libertarian leader and former Republican presidential candidate, in one of his newsletters mentioned that there was some Cato Institute study recently that found that corporate welfare somehow summed up exceeded welfare traditionally defined, you know, which would be pretty amazing. It's certainly very extensive,
yeah.
Modern corporate welfare. So,
when the Great Recession happened, Morgan, I'm sure you've talked about this a lot. You know, it was mind-boggling that the government came up with $1 trillion to bail out bankers who had made bad loans. $1 trillion in one day. And pretty much, you know, printed up by the Fed and the Treasury, and so
Neil Barofsky, then the one-time Inspector General in the U.S. Department of the Treasury, trying to track where all this money went. He has a book out, Bailout. I haven't read it yet, but Matt Taibbi of Rolling Stone did a very good article here about 3 months ago on the trillions, trying to track those. It's just mind-boggling. Yeah, not just TARP. I remember when the first vote came down, and there were a lot of Congress. The mail and the calls and everything was running 101 against. And remember, they voted it down the first go-round, and I was just cheering. This was just, wow. And then they re-crafted it and put some forth. And you know, paid certain people off, and then they passed it. But that was a great moment.
Didn't they famously bribe Kay Bailey Hutchinson to vote for it? And wasn't that in the news for a while? And a few other senators who were against it at the time, they just promised to shower them with money for their districts or their states, and that's all it takes.
Yeah, I hated this guy in my district who's now retired, named Mike Ross. He was a blue dog Democrat. What a liar, you know. In other words, we're fiscally responsible or conservative, but liberal on these other things. It's just horrible stuff.
On your theme that there's nothing new in politics, I've written about how Abe Lincoln, as a young man in the 1830s, championed corporate welfare for the road building and canal building companies in Illinois when he was the leader of the Whigs in Illinois, and they got the Illinois government to spend about $11 million on all this stuff, and not a single road or canal was finished, and much of the money was stolen. And the state taxpayers were deep in the debt for years to come. And so normally normal people would think, well, that would be the end of that guy's political career. But no, the opposite happened, that he arranged for a lot of corporate fat cats to make a lot of money digging holes. And those people learned to support his political career for the next 20 years or so.
I know canals in general they were mostly British investors, and they ultimately defaulted on a lot of that debt. That's total corruption. Well, let me raise another issue with Lincoln's policies and views. Didn't he defend the right of the people to reform their government at any time, or any defended secession, which was commonly understood that the states formed the national government or the central government and had the right to withdraw at any time? Didn't he defend secession at the time of the Mexican War?
He was a member of Congress for 2 years, and then while he was in Congress during the Mexican War, he wanted to criticize President Polk, and he came out in favor of the right of secession. He said, whenever the people have the power or the ability to do it, they have a right to do it. And so, in my book, The Real Lincoln, I quoted a big, fat, two-volume set of books called Northern Editorials on Secession. And it's all Northern newspaper editorials in 1859 to 1861. And the overwhelming majority of them essentially quoted Thomas Jefferson in saying that governments derive their just powers from the consent of the governed. And when the people decide that they no longer consent, then they have a natural right to secede, to leave. And so the attitude of most Northerners in 1860, 1861 was, well, of course the Union, the American Union, is voluntary. It would be an abomination to murder our fellow citizens and burn down their towns and steal their property if they attempted to just simply leave the Union, because, you know, they did. Article 7 of the Constitution says that the way the Constitution is to be ratified is through votes by political conventions of the states. And that we never would have had a Constitution if the understanding was that any state that would ever leave the federal government, had a right to bomb it, kill its citizens by the tens of thousands, burn its cities to the ground, and walk off with millions of dollars of private property. That was Lincoln's theory of the origins of the Constitution. And of course, it's total BS.
Let me read this sentence to you from Wikipedia about Abraham Lincoln. The second sentence in the Wikipedia, the online encyclopedia, says, and I quote, "Lincoln successfully led the United States through its greatest constitutional, military, and moral crisis, the Civil War, the American Civil War, preserving the Union." Now, among other things that stick in my craw there is at the end where you just mentioned it. The Union was a voluntary arrangement. It was never meant to be a coerced, you know, once in the mafia, always in the mafia, or dead. No. But that's what Lincoln made it, a unitary state.
He destroyed the American Union of the Founding Fathers and in its place put a coerced empire from which there can never be any escape. That's the type of union the Soviet Union was, that, you know, rolling the tanks into Prague if the Czechs, act up in the 1950s. That's the type of union the Soviet Union was. And so Lincoln essentially ushered in a Soviet-style coerced union many decades before the Soviets did the same thing.
And among other things, you know, he was so modern, right? Passed the first personal income tax, or was it just a corporate income tax?
It was personal income tax. It was graduated, too. It was 5% and 10%.
Aha, progressive, as in disease, yeah. Yes.
Right. But it lasted until 1872.
Okay. Yeah, I often say you pick your worst year for the American idea, but 1913 kind of weighs heavily, doesn't it? Because go ahead.
In my other book, Hamilton's Curse, one of the chapters is called The Revolution of 1913, where we got the Fed, the income tax, and the 17th Amendment. And the 17th Amendment allowed for the direct election of United States senators. But under the original Constitution, they were appointed by the states. The founders were very clever about that, because they understood that a senator who was appointed by the legislature, if he went off to the nation's capital and was bought off by lobbyists and voted against the interests of the folks back home, he could be fired immediately. He could be just recalled that day. There was no waiting 5.5 years for the next senatorial election or any of that. And that did happen on numerous occasions. There were, I think, six senators who promised that they would oppose or that they would support Andrew Jackson and his battle against the Bank of the United States, which was a precursor of the Fed. And then when they went to Washington, they were essentially bribed away from that, and they voted to censor Andrew Jackson, and they were all fired immediately by their state legislatures. And so that greatly centralized political power in Washington and away from the people, as did the Fed and the income tax. You know, once the government had the Fed and the income tax, it could get us into nation building. You know, that we would not have been able to have been involved in World War I had we not had the Fed and the income tax in 1913. And just, you know, 4 years later, thanks to the Fed, the price level doubled. We entered World War I, which had nothing to do with America. And Jim Powell, in his book on Teddy Roosevelt, a book called Bully Boy, makes a very persuasive argument that had the Americans not intervened in World War I, there may not have even been a World War II.
I agree. Right. Yeah. World War II was just a continuation of the unfinished business of the Great War. And right. if America had not intervened and, in a sense, won it, for the Allies, even though the Germany still had a standing army in the field, they just would have bled themselves for a while longer, and who knows? But it wouldn't have resulted in stripping Germany of this and that and the other thing, and making a way for an Adolf Hitler to capitalize on all these grievances.
Yeah, the reparations that they imposed on Germany just drove Hitler into the hands of the German people. They were so desperate, they impoverished Germany, and their children were starving, and so they turned to a dictator. And makes the case that the Russian communists were also strengthened by American intervention in World War I.
Oh yeah, the whole Woodrow Wilson project was a disaster for humanity, and made it the bloodiest century ever. Yeah, and another thing that's going on here is we have this special relationship with Great Britain. Well, the Brits were always in a rivalry with the dominant country on the continent, Germany. So they were looking for any angle to harm Germany or suppress its growth, and that still persists. And the Brits are supposed to be always the good guy, but
yeah.
You know, history shows, for example, that Winston Churchill helped arrange the Lusitania sinking, which was a warship, you know, not just a innocent passenger ship.
Yeah.
And all this, it's just amazing how so much of history is misunderstood.
Yeah, for your listeners, if they're interested in Churchill, they should go online and look for a series of essays by Ralph Rako, a great historian, Ralph Rako, called Rethinking Churchill. And they were on lewrockwell.com. I think they're on Mises.org also. But he was a student of Friedrich Hayek, Rako was, and he wrote his doctoral dissertation many decades ago on European political history, so he's a man who knows what he's talking about. I wish he would have written a book about Churchill before he retired, but I'm afraid he didn't.
He's a great guy to have a beer with, too, isn't he?
Yes.
Ralph Rako.
Yes, he is. Yeah, Ralph is an old friend of mine, very charming guy and extraordinarily knowledgeable.
Let me read another sentence to go back to Abraham Lincoln here. We may have to pick it up on the other side of the break, but reared in a poor family on the western frontier, Lincoln was mostly self-educated and became a country lawyer, a Whig party leader, etc. Well, on the other side of the break, we will return, and Tom DiLorenzo, our guest, a Lincoln expert, and we have a caller we can talk to after the break.
Atomic energy, 'cause none of them are gonna stop at the time. How long shall they kill our prophets while we stand aside and look? Yes, some say it's just a part of it. We've got to fulfill the book. Won't you hear to sing these songs of freedom?
is all I ever had. Redemption songs, all I ever had. Redemption songs, these songs of freedom. Songs of freedom.
Are you over your head in debt and not sure what to do? Did you know there's a way to legally wipe out debt? Stop harassing phone calls, even stop foreclosure or repossession? Well, the answer is yes. Pick up the phone right now and call the bankruptcy hotline at the law offices of Craig Zimmerman. With 17 years experience as a practicing attorney, Craig knows how to get the creditors off your back and get you peace of mind. Most people don't realize that bankruptcy is a great alternative by immediately stopping collection calls, allowing you to keep your home, eliminate all of your debt, and give you a fresh start. Call now for a free, no-obligation consultation at 800-281-2286 and learn how bankruptcy could help you. So stop wondering what to do with your debt and call us at 800-281-2286. 800-281-2286. Not all will qualify. The law offices of Craig Zimmerman is federally designated as a debt relief agency.
Office is located in Dallas and Santa Ana, California.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to tell you about a revolutionary new product from our sponsor, Elixir Liquid. It's called an electronic cigarette. If you're a smoker and you're sick and tired of killing yourself and those around you, you really need to check out this product, Elixir Liquid, an electronic cigarette. Traditional cigarettes have over 4,000 chemicals along with 65 known carcinogens and are being sold for up to $11 a pack in some places around the country. Electronic cigarettes, on the other hand, consist of only three ingredients and are a fraction of the price of traditional cigarettes. An electronic cigarette, or e-cigarette, consists of a rechargeable battery, a small heating element called an atomizer, and liquid nicotine. When used, the e-cigarette will produce what looks like smoke, but it's actually a harmless water vapor while giving you the nicotine your body is craving. That's right, you can finally get all the nicotine you need without all the harmful chemicals associated with smoking. If you've ever tried to quit smoking, or if you tried one of those overpriced, low-quality electronic cigarettes being sold in the mall and were less than impressed, you need to visit our sponsor, Elixir Liquid, at www.futuresmokes.com today. That's www.futuresmokes.com. Once you're there, you'll find the hottest electronic cigarettes and accessories and over 100 choices of intensely flavored liquid nicotine. That's right, Elixir Liquid is known for their mind-blowing, handcrafted liquid nicotine. So if you're already an e-smoker, be sure to check these guys out. No tar, no carcinogens, and no foul odors. The electronic cigarette truly is the future of smoking. So stop killing yourself and those around you and try an electronic cigarette from Elixir Liquid today. And fans of the Pete Santilli Show can get a special 10% discount with coupon code REVOLT at checkout. That's www.futuresmokes.com. Hi, folks. Pete Santilli here. As a prominent social media personality on Facebook and Twitter since they were first launched, I participated in one-dimensional discussions with literally hundreds of thousands of followers. When I first set up my SecondLife.com account about a year ago, I entered a whole new magical world that brought my social media activity to life. Second Life is much more than just a 3D game or a social media platform. It'll bring your online persona to life in one of the most beautiful virtual reality simulators on the internet. It's free, and besides, it's the best way to listen to the Pete Santilli Show. You can interact with me live as I broadcast
now,
daily from the Overthrow Bunker studio. To get your free account, go to any one of our episodes and click on the Second Life banner. Once you're in, we'll give you the grand tour of our newly built Camfina, the very first educational tool of its kind anywhere in the world. For a limited time, if you sign up for a new SecondLife.com account, we'll give you a priceless welcome package. SecondLife.com. Join now, tune in, and connect with your friends at the Pete Santilli Show.
Really do.
Welcome back to the Reynolds Reveal. This is your host, Morgan Reynolds. If you'd like to call, the number is 218-862-9829. And we have a caller on line one. Mr. Watt, do you have a question or comment for our guest?
Mute themselves
Professor
by pressing
Tom DiLorenzo. Go ahead.
Hello, Dr. Reynolds, Mr. Lorenzo. Hello there.
Hi.
Hi.
Yes, Mr. Watt, good to hear you.
I've been listening to your show, and I don't know if maybe I'm oversimplifying it for myself. Are you saying that the Civil War was fought for economic reasons, not for, and that slavery was just a guise in order for Lincoln to start this war?
Professor DiLorenzo, what's your answer?
Well, you know, all wars in all of human history have been fought, at least in part, over money and power. And it's hard to think of any of them that were fought over humanitarianism. And so this would have been like the only war in all of human history that was fought over humanitarianism, if that's the story. But you will not find an American historian, even the left-wingers, even the Marxists like Eric Foner of Columbia, who will say that Lincoln invaded the southern states to free the slaves, because Lincoln announced to the world, as did the United States Congress in 1861 and 1862, that the purpose of the war, they said, was to save the Union and not to disturb what they called the domestic institutions of the state. And then, but if you study history, they destroyed the Union because it was no longer voluntary, and what they really meant was to keep the southern states paying federal taxes. That's what they wanted to save, according to Lincoln's own words. So you don't have to rely on me. Read Lincoln's first inaugural address carefully, and you'll see that that was the purpose of the war in his own words. And that's all been covered up over the years by politically correct historians who simply lie about it. Like in the latest Lincoln movie by Steven Spielberg, the preeminent Lincoln historian of our time is David Donald from Harvard University. And the story of the Lincoln movie is supposedly Lincoln used his great political skill to get the 13th Amendment through the House of Representatives. That's the amendment that ended slavery. But David Donald, the most prominent Lincoln scholar of the day, he says on page 545 of his biography of Lincoln that this never happened, that Lincoln did nothing to get the 13th Amendment passed, even when he was asked to help by the real abolitionists in Congress, people like Thaddeus Stevens, he said no. And so, but Spielberg made this whole movie now that says the opposite of the truth. It's based on a book by Doris Kearns Goodwin, who a few years ago was kicked off the Pulitzer Prize Committee because she confessed to plagiarism in her book about the Kennedy family. And now Spielberg is going to give copies of his DVD version of the movie to every public school in America. And so that will continue the brainwashing and the lying and propaganda, he hopes, for the current generation of school children.
Aren't all political policies done in for noble purposes? But it's not the real name of the game. It's always about money and power, and extension of the state.
Yes, look at the Patriot Act. Vote against something called the Patriot Act? But it's essentially one giant attack on civil liberties. And so it always sounds wonderful, but like Morgan said, it's always inevitably about money and power of the state at the expense of freedom and prosperity of the individual. That's what government is.
I've read The Real Lincoln, and it's a great read for Mr. Watt. And really, most of the book, Tom, I think this is fair, is quotations from Lincoln. A lot of it is, right? You know, you want to know what he's up to.
A lot of it is. Right. If you get into this literature, you'll find that when you find these really odious things, like Lincoln made a speech during the Lincoln-Douglas debates where he said, "I, as much as any man, want the superior position to belong to the white race," and so he sounded worse than David Duke. You know, he sounded like the Grand Wizard of the Ku Klux Klan in that speech in Ottawa, Illinois. But if you read the history books about it, the historians will mention it, and then they'll devote 20 or 30 pages of spin to try to talk their way around it. They'll say, well. He had to pretend he was a white supremacist to win the votes of the white supremacists to become president, so that he could launch his secret plan to free the slaves. And of course, there's no basis in fact. There's never any footnotes when they say things like this. They never quote Lincoln or anyone else as ever having said any such thing. They just make it all up. And so when you read books about Lincoln of that type, that's what you get. You get a few facts in there, and then you get 20, 30, 50 pages of spin, and the facts get lost in all the spin.
Mr. Watt, I'll allow you to do one follow-up, and then we've got a second caller on line two. Mr.
Okay.
Watt.
I was wondering, then, what is this huge push behind the lamestream media to take our moron-in-chief and paint him in the same light as Lincoln? What actual point do they have by, making him seem, as blah, blah, is just like Lincoln? If Lincoln is, are they just trying to cover up history and say, well, Lincoln did all this great stuff, and this is what, blah, blah wants to do? For painting them in the same picture?
During the Cold War, Pravda was the Russian newspaper that was sort of the propaganda organ of the Soviet state. Almost all of our media, with a few exceptions, are just like Pravda. I have an old friend named Yuri Maltsev, who was actually an advisor to Mikhail Gorbachev, and he defected from the Soviet Union in the 80s. And he's an economics professor in Wisconsin now, in Kenosha, Wisconsin. And Yuri, once told me that no one in Russia believed anything that the government ever said. But in America, when he came to America, he said, "Boy, Americans seem to believe everything that the government says." That's because of the influence of the media. And Yuri calls Obama a proud Marxist. This is a man who grew up the first 45 years of his life in the Soviet Union, and he knows what a Marxist is. He worked for Gorbachev, I think the average member of the American media, even if he doesn't call himself a Marxist, although Chris Matthews did on this show once, he said I got all my politics from Karl Marx. And I actually blogged about that and quoted him and linked the YouTube of him actually saying it. And most of the rest of them are like that. So it's ideological.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Watt, for your call. On line two, we've got Steve from Pittsburgh. Steve, go ahead.
Hey. I just want to say thank you, because the history and the knowledge that you have spread is just, incredible. And just thank both of you very, very much for the history lesson that you have passed on to me that I could pass on to others. Just thank you from the bottom of my heart.
Hey, we appreciate your compliments.
You're very welcome,
Steve.
Sounds like a brilliant man.
Yes. Steve's a Vietnam vet, and he recognizes the truth here. He's been fooled one too many times, maybe, huh?
I get a lot of email from Vietnam vets who always have suspected that they were used and abused and tricked in their youth, and they certainly have understood that for a long time. And when they read history like this, they appreciate it.
When it comes to the 13th Amendment, which is falsely featured in Spielberg's movie about Lincoln, there's an interesting outfall from that prohibiting forced labor or slavery, in that there was a lawsuit against conscription, the military forced draft in the Great War. And guess what? The Supreme Court decided, well, that's not really forced labor when you're forced into the military.
You tell somebody, if you don't go into the military, we'll make you live in a cage for 5 years. And then if you leave the military, once you're in, we will shoot you or hang you. But that's not force. That's what the Supreme Court said that during the World War I era to justify the conscription not being in violation of the 13th Amendment. But it's all nonsense.
You've got to hand it to attorneys now, don't you, in terms of their artfulness with argument and fact and law?
Yeah, they're paid professional liars, a lot of them, and that's why there's so many good lawyer jokes out there, I guess.
More than economists or accountants, right?
Yeah, even more.
Hey, I've got one more item I wanted to bring to your attention, get your reaction to Dr. DiLorenzo on in our newspaper, the statewide newspaper, Arkansas Democrat Gazette. Of course, similar stories were run across the nation a week ago honoring Lincoln. And in the editorial here, it says in part regarding Lincoln, barely out of his boyhood, young Lincoln took a flatboat loaded with merchandise, corn, whiskey, and such down the Mississippi to the great and then still exotic port of New Orleans. It was the usual trade route for much of the Midwest produce when it was still just the West, et cetera. And Alan Gentry would remind the 19-year-old Lincoln's, would remember the 19-year-old Lincoln's reaction to the sight of a slave auction in 1828 down in New Orleans. And Gentry would recall looking down at Lincoln's hands and seeing that he, quote, doubled his fist tightly, his knuckles went white, unquote. And there was a burly black field hand auctioned off at a good price. Then came the real horror when the sale of fancy girls began. And Lincoln said, Alan, that's a disgrace. If I ever get a lick at that thing, I'll hit it hard, unquote. Is this story made up, do you think, or is this for real?
Well, that's made up. There's a book published by Oxford University Press entitled They Never Said It, a book of fake quotes and quotations. And there's a section of a chapter on Lincoln, and that's one of the things that it says that he never said. He never even said you could fool some of the people some of the time and all of the people some of the time, that famous quote. He never said that. There's another quote that where Lincoln supposedly said, if this country is ever destroyed, it will be destroyed from within. He never said that either. And so and I talk about that in my book, Lincoln Unmasked. But it's based on an Oxford University Press book.
The Gettysburg Address is the much praised address, but if you read it, it's really appalling in terms of a totalitarian outlook, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. In fact, the great H.L. Mencken, the literary giant of the early 20th century, the Sage of Baltimore, he was known as. He wrote an essay on it. It's on the web somewhere, where he pointed out the obvious fact that the Gettysburg Address might have been good poetry, but it was false history, because it was the Southerners who were fighting for consent of the governed. They no longer consented to being governed by Washington, D.C., and it was the North that was fighting to force them against their consent to remain governed by Washington, D.C.
We've got one more caller, Tom. If I could get Nemo on line one. Nemo, okay. Go ahead. Ask Dr. DiLorenzo your question. Nemo?
Yeah, hey,
go.
How you doing?
Good.
I noticed you said something about Baltimore. Can you touch up on that?
Yes, I mentioned H.L. Mencken, who was from Baltimore.
What's your question, Nemo, then?
What were you saying about Baltimore, though?
Actually, Tom teaches in Baltimore.
Yeah, well, I mentioned H.L. Mencken, the writer who was from Baltimore, wrote an essay about the Gettysburg Address, pointing out that it was ass backwards, that it was, it wasn't, the North was not fighting for government of the people and by the people. They were fighting against that, because it was the South that no longer consented to being governed by Washington, D.C. So that's the only, that's where I mentioned Baltimore. H.L. Mencken is from there.
Hey, in the five-part movie Gettysburg that Ted Turner had created, they actually give it 2 minutes, the argument for the South, when the British journalist asked one of Robert E. Lee's generals, what are you guys fighting about? You recall that?
I think there's one scene where a couple of soldiers say, we're fighting because you're down here. Something like that. It wasn't a general. I don't remember.
This general replied, it's not about the darkies. It's about Washington, D.C. telling us how to run our lives. That was the I'm paraphrasing, of course. Well, hey, what a great episode 2. Tom DiLorenzo on Abraham Lincoln. The Rebels Reveal returns next Tuesday.
Owe the IRS more than $10,000? Well, it happens to the best of us. Just ask Charlie.
I was a pro NFL player, defensive back. Yes, I did get a letter from the IRS.
It's a scary thing, even for a big man like Charlie.
Well, man, when you see those dreaded letters, capital IRS, $60,000, man, you almost dropped to your knees. You know, they were trying to levy my accounts, garnish me, real bad situation.
Charlie found out about the law offices of Craig Zimmerman.
I heard their commercial on the radio. I said, well, hey, let me give them a call. It was like talking to my brother, talking to a great friend. I called Craig Zimmerman, and they put a stop to it.
You'll love the way they do business.
Like we say in the NFL, they never drop the ball. They did a great job for me.
You may be able to significantly reduce your tax debt. Call the law offices of Craig Zimmerman and get your game plan. 800-638-0727.
Craig Zimmerman, they threw a touchdown for me.
Call now and find out how much you can save. 800-638-0727. 800-638-0727.
Would you like to see who's really hiding behind the green mask of the environmental movement? Are you ready for smart growth and sustainable living? Have you ever heard of Agenda 21? Well, Rosa Corey has, and she wrote a book about it. Agenda 21 is the United Nations blueprint for global domination, and they want to make you their slave. Have you ever wondered what smart growth really is and just how far the global elite will go to get what they want? Is Agenda 21 already at work in your neighborhood? The answer to all your questions can be found by going to thepetesantillishow.com and clicking on the Agenda 21 tab at the top of the page. Order your copy of Behind the Green Mask, You and Agenda 21 by Rosa Corey on Amazon.com, and you'll support the efforts of The Pete Santilli Show. Behind the Green Mask blows the lid off the New World Order's plan to rid the planet of everything unsustainable. Read the book and then ask yourself, are you sustainable?
Ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to tell you about a revolutionary new product from our sponsor, Elixir Liquid. It's called an electronic cigarette. If you're a smoker and you're sick and tired of killing yourself and those around you, you really need to check out this product, Elixir Liquid and Electronic Cigarette. Traditional cigarettes have over 4,000 chemicals along with 65 known carcinogens and are being sold for up to $11 a pack in some places around the country. Electronic cigarettes, on the other hand, consist of only 3 ingredients and are a fraction of the price of traditional cigarettes. An electronic cigarette, or e-cigarette, consists of a rechargeable battery, a small heating element called an atomizer, and liquid nicotine. When used, the e-cigarette will produce what looks like smoke, but it's actually a harmless water vapor while giving you the nicotine your body is craving. That's right, you can finally get all the nicotine you need without all the harmful chemicals associated with smoking. If you've ever tried to quit smoking, or if you tried one of those overpriced, low-quality electronic cigarettes being sold in the mall and were less than impressed, you need to visit our sponsor, Elixir Liquid, at www.futuresmokes.com today. That's www.futuresmokes.com. Once you're there, you'll find the hottest electronic cigarettes and accessories and over 100 choices of intensely flavored liquid nicotine. That's right, Elixir...
Well, you know, on a night like this, when it's all dark and scary, there's no reason to go hungry on the trail. That's why I like to pack myself a little bit of cheese jerky. Hot dog, this stuff is good. I prefer the chicken flavor. Well, it's low in fat and high in protein for those nights when you're, sugaring on the trail. It's also good for the post-apocalypse. So that's why you're run on down and get yourself some Jay's Jerky. You want to find out more about Jay's Jerky? Just get all that feller Pete Santilli and he'll hook you up. Once again, don't forget, Jay's Jerky. Ooh, that's good meat.
All right, great show.
Welcome back to the Reynolds Reveal. We had quite a nice time with Professor Tom DiLorenzo, the world's leading scholar on Abraham Lincoln, and the beauty that they pour all the beatitude, the halo on Abraham Lincoln is entirely undeserved by standards that the founding fathers established, namely a nation dedicated to liberty, the first nation on earth to be so created and still truly dedicated to it out there in the street, if not among the power elite. If you'd like to call in, this is the final segment. Let's review what we've done. Our call, our number is 218-862-9829. That number again, 218-862-9829. This is your host, Morgan Reynolds, on February 19, 2013. It's the day after President's Day, and the real bad guy on President's Day is Abraham Lincoln. He's on Mount Rushmore. He's on Air Money. And he's got the best memorial monument in Washington, D.C., entirely undeserved by my opinion and that of Dr. Tom DiLorenzo. And it's amazing to me that this Steven Spielberg movie, which is entirely dishonest and untruthful, has to go to such lengths to create a fictional event. And I haven't seen the movie. I'm not going to pay to see the movie. Maybe I'll watch it for free one day down the road, but I can't support it. And to make up an event like the heroic passage of the 13th Amendment to ban slavery, the 13th Amendment Constitution, it's amazing that they can't do a two-hour movie based on truth that somehow makes Lincoln look good. They have to make it all up. And we have a caller. Trainwreck Tommy is on the line. Trainwreck, how are you today?
I'm good. This is an amazing conversation. It's not like I didn't expect it to not be the truth, because I feel like I'm blessed that I learned how to trade and was a very technical person, because I realized just through my own mistakes that you had to learn when you traded that no matter what anybody said, it never mattered, because what you're looking at when you see a chart is people's brainwaves. It's an EKG of the mass of the sheeple that are trading. So the founding fathers looked at 72 regimes and picked the pieces out that would make us last longer than anyone. And if you abide by those rules, just like you abide by trading rules, you'll always survive. And it's only when you start breaking those rules that everything falls apart and then you blow up. And then you spend all your money and then you go bankrupt and you're gone. And I've watched that happen hundreds of times. And it's amazing. It's the same thing.
So are traders or investors, they're breaking their own rules. Is it of emotion? They get carried away and they forget the rules for at least for a moment.
It's that old saying. It's like my Italian grandma used to say, when you get your head out of the bag, they're going to push it back in. So it's sort of like in your own world, absolute power corrupts absolutely. Because as you become a better, a bigger trader, there's no checks and balances for you other than your own system. And if you go outside that system, then you start getting in trouble. That's why you see rogue traders and you hear about rogue traders going, you know, off the wall.
Yeah,
because they got so good and they figured, okay. And you know, the strongest human emotion then takes over, which is called denial. And that's what that takes over everything. It takes over the government, takes over the best traders, takes over the best actors, takes over the best people. And then they just self-destruct.
Yeah. We've all been there in one form or another, one occasion or another, haven't we?
Absolutely. I've been there. Usually the rule is
sometimes.
Yep. And the rule with traders is it takes you through, we call it blowing out. Blowing out means you lose all your money. So when you first start out, no matter what you start out with, you'll blow out three times before you'll get really good. And it happens to everybody.
Some entrepreneurs, of course, have lost a couple of fortunes, so they lose two instead of three. So, Tommy, you're saying...
Entrepreneurs become dictators.
In the free markets, prior to all these massive bailouts, getting blown out is kind of just desserts, getting blown in or prospering, thriving is because you've made the right calls. And this can be benign, can't it? It's the problem is the massive bailouts at the expense of society in general.
Well, you're not smacking anybody on the wrist. They're not learning anything. It's like a kid doing something bad. You're just rewarding him for being bad. You're rewarding all the bad trades. You're rewarding all the bad decisions because nobody's getting fired. No one's going to jail. So they got nothing to lose, and they know they're too big to fail. And they really go crazy.
It used to be called the Greenspan put. Now, I don't know what the common name is. Nothing's
the Bernanke, it's the Bernanke put.
Bernanke put. Yeah, we've got a safety net for the biggest losers, but none for at least a small one, if any, for small losers. Right? Nobody cares about my community bank down the street.
Well, they try to destroy those banks. They don't want those to survive.
Yeah,
remember in the '90s, you had SNLs all over the place. And then you had the first recession, the small recession, and banking. You had that whole Keating 5 thing, and what that boiled down to was the Fed just gave them all cheap loans, raised the rates, blew them out, and took over all those banks. That's what the whole game is.
Got rid of the savings and loans.
Yeah, just like they did in 2008. They raised all the reserve requirements. They blew all the little banks out, and they took. When you go around any community now, what you see is the major four banks. You won't see any little mom and pops. You won't see small commercial banks. You know, there's some credit unions around, but most everything's been gobbled up.
Oh, you mean in your part of the woods there? Not in Arkansas. There's still a lot of small banks and entry. Yeah. Because banking is a pretty prosperous industry, really, under normal circumstances. But during when you get a bubble burst and a debt crisis, it's just a massive thing now. And what's your view about asset prices? Of course, the stock market is complacent, to put it mildly, right now, right? They're all partying.
Well, I'm the opposite of everybody. That's the way I've always made my money. And when everybody's screaming the world's going to end and the dollar's going to get destroyed and gold's going through the roof and the stock market's getting crashed, I'm going to crash. I do the opposite. But I don't do it blindly. I do it technically. So just like over the last few years, especially this year, been long stocks because they pretty much tested a lot of bottoms last summertime and none of them got through. Now they all failed the bottoms. So there was no place else to go but back up. And, the investment sentiment was very bearish at the time. So that means it's going to be bullish right after that because it's like a pizza pie. You get a pie, you cut the pie, only a quarter of the pie makes three quarters of the money, and three quarters of the pie loses the money. That's the way it works.
Yes, it does. Right. And a lot of small investors, me included, got burned in one form or another with the, I'll call it the internet or NASDAQ bubble. And then we had the 08 early 09 crash, right?
Well, I can remember that. I remember that like it was yesterday, the internet bubble, because I had just, I traded pretty heavily during that. Even though I was an oil trader, I still traded huge in that, bigger than I ever traded oil. But I was fully aware of that I was trading a bubble, because if you ever read the book Reminiscence of a Stock Operator, that's like the holy Bible to traders. And if you read it, you could take U.S. Steel out of there, and you could put Yahoo in there, and you could take another steel company and put Google in there. And these are the stocks that went from $3, $4 to $400, $500, just like they did in 1905. So what you realize, I remember when I first bought Yahoo, I bought it because I liked the tuna fish commercials. I knew they were involved in this high tech stuff, but technically it's the way I traded. And it was, that's the way I traded all these stocks. So like, whoever came up with this amazing idea, and I knew everybody would just jump in. You jumped in and went for the ride. But I knew it was over when I was walking in Penn Station. And one of my rules when people that worked for me was never watch the TV. If you could watch TV to realize what everyone else is doing so you could do the opposite, that's good. But otherwise, just watch Ren and Stimpy and read cartoons. What, you know? Because I don't want you watching TV. I want you looking at the charts. But I'm passing the newsstand. I always look at the headlines. So I'm passing this newsstand, and I can't remember the guy's name. I think his name is Dent, and he's always for the last 20 years calling every move. He says Dow is going to like 28,000 or something like that. And I walked in the office that morning. I said, dude, it's over. And then my other friend's calling me who runs a mutual fund. He says, dude, everybody I have is selling their Dow stocks and buying into the NASDAQ. And he goes, it has to be the top. And then one stock in particular hit basically $1,000 a share, just like U.S. Steel did in 1905. And I said, dude, that's it. It's over. Absolutely over. And that day was the peak of the market.
James Glassman had a book in that time spell, what was it, Dow 40,000, I think it was called. He's at the American Enterprise Institute, AEI. Uh-huh. Yeah, that's another sign. It's going to take a dive from here.
So you know, it's Tommy, it's all teenage wasteland. So it is.
We need your top 10 trading rules to survive by.
There's only one.
You need to come on. What's that?
There isn't 10. There's only one. It's called discipline. That's it. Period. If you don't have discipline, you're done.
Thank you, Tommy Trainwreck, for investment advice. And we're out now.
Thanks for waking us up to Clinton. And there's another book out there called Truths in American History that's great to read also, because then you learn about Columbus, who is the biggest mass murderer in the world.
Well, we got a lot on our plate here right at the end of the Reynolds Reveal. Tune in next week. Mark Reynolds, your host, the Reynolds Reveal. We're going to do some exciting things, including 9/11. Thank you.
For you to give you a fresh start. We provide a free initial confidential consultation. Don't spend another day wondering what to do about your debt. Call 800-281-2286. The consultation is free, and so is your phone call. You have nothing to lose but your debt, so call now at 800-281-2286. That's 800-281-2286. Office is located in Dallas and Santa Ana, California.
Mamma Mia's Authentic Italian Cookie Company. Hand-rolled traditional-style Italian cookies from recipes passed down through the generations from Sicily to Louisiana. A taste of the old world can now be savored and made a tradition in every home worldwide. Imagine the delight of your family and guests when they bite into the authentic taste of Italy at your next family holiday or special occasion. Mamma Mia's Authentic Cookie Company, preserving the art of Italian baking and providing you with quality, delightful cookies that you will enjoy for years to come. 14 different Italian cookies sold by the pound and FedEx to your door. Could anything be more convenient? Visit MamaMia's.com and browse in Mama's Cookie Gallery for ideas for your next party and custom cookie order. Beautiful cookies baked in America, inspired by Italy and Mama's love. Mamma Mia's Authentic Italian Cookies. Traditional, convenient, and delicioso. Biscotto molto buono.
Ever ask yourself, where do the towers go? Well, if you want the truth, if you can handle the truth, tune in Thursdays and Fridays from 5 till 7 Pacific Coast Time. Dr. Judy Wood is doing a program called ICU PSYOP Recovery Program, addressing your questions, your curiosities, your mysteries regarding that fateful day. So it's a character-driven production on Guerrilla Media Network, 5 to 7, Thursdays and Friday evenings, Pacific Coast Time. If you can handle the truth, tune in.